This podcast is sponsored by ebookit.com, self-publishing solutions for the independent author and small press. Visit us today at ebookit.com. Welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast, the official podcast of Toastmasters International. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Toastmasters Podcast. My name is Beau Bennett.
And my name is Ryan Levesque.
And today is May 25th, Tuesday, 2010. Ryan, who do we got lined up for today?
We have a guest from the Great North, Canada, today. Doreen Pengrass is joining us. Doreen joyfully entered the world of self-employment in 1993 after a long career in the public sector. Equipped with enthusiasm, a broad-based skill set, and an innate ability to work with written or spoken word, Doreen has worked on a wide variety of creative projects. Her freelance features have appeared in a variety of print and online publications. Doreen has co-authored two books, a travel guidebook for Frommers, and more recently, the best-selling Manitoba Book of Everything, published by McIntyre Purcell in 2008. In March of 2010, Doreen's latest book, Before You Say Yes, was released by Dundurn Press. In addition to books and a wide variety of periodical assignments, Doreen has also done writing and editing projects for various corporate entities. Doreen has formally and informally mentored many new and emerging writers and many new Toastmasters. Doreen Pengrass, welcome to the Toastmasters Podcast.
Thank you very much.
Welcome, Doreen.
Great to have you with us today.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Doreen, to give our listeners some insight into your background, do you want to start off and tell us a little bit about your personal interest in volunteerism?
Yeah, I think I kind of inherited that from my father because he was always very involved in different volunteer things. Like he was involved with the Knights of Columbus and president of his church, and he was involved with his union when he was younger and this and that. So I grew up thinking that that was the way it was, is that you immediately got involved in things that you were passionate about. So when I started working, I became involved, in our union, and I became involved in different professional organizations as I worked my way up the corporate ladder. And I joined Toastmasters back in 2001, and was always on the executive of my Toastmasters club. And now I'm working on behalf of the district as the public relations officer. So I've always done volunteerism, and I'm very passionate about it. And I had just finished a 6-year stint last March, like in 2009, on the National Board of Access Copyright, which is Canada's copyright licensing agency. And I was feeling a bit of a void because that board was very interesting for me. It was very beneficial to the creative community. And all of a sudden, I kind of had this extra time that I wasn't volunteering on it. And I thought to myself, what am I going to do with that time? And being a writer, I immediately thought, gee, I should write a book about volunteerism and what it's like to work on a nonprofit board, because there's never been a book done like that. And I confirmed that fact with a lawyer that I know who does a lot of work with nonprofits. And so fortunately, I know some publishers, and I got in touch with one that does a lot of business books, and he was interested, and the rest is history. I wrote the book, and it's receiving very positive response.
Very good. So the book is entitled Before You Say Yes, A Guide to the Pleasures and Pitfalls of Volunteer Boards. And I'm sure we'll be getting into some of those pleasures and pitfalls. But I'm wondering if you could tell us, why do you think in particular Toastmasters would find your book useful?
Well, because no matter what kind of organization you volunteer for, there, you're going to be dealing with human dynamics. And so a lot of what I do cover in the book is, you know, interactions between people, how to deal with difficult people, learning to check your ego at the door and not try to drive your own agenda, and talking about the importance of listening as well as being a good communicator. And we certainly do teach those skills in Toastmasters, that listening is equally as important as speaking. But I really emphasize that in the book because I have been on boards where, you know, some members would just sit around the table and only talk their own points, but they don't care at all about what the person across the table is telling them. So I think that that's really important to emphasize. And also some of the logistics of running meetings. Now, in Toastmasters, we follow the Roberts Rules of Orders, and that's very important. So I devote a chapter to that in the book, and I thank the members of the Parliamentarian Club here in Manitoba for assisting me with that. Roger Woloshin, who's a very prominent local Toastmaster, guided me along the Robert's Rules of Order chapter. I also have a chapter on directors and officers insurance, and that's important too, because whenever you volunteer in any capacity, you should always ensure that the organization is protected with directors and officers insurance, so that should something go wrong in the financial planning or whatever, that you're not on the hook individually. I also have a chapter dealing with disaster plans and with succession planning. That's another thing that would be interesting to Toastmasters, in that you may be doing a specific role and you may be doing it well, but you've got to ensure that you find someone to take over your spot, or at least provide the information that, you know, somebody can ask you questions. Perhaps you may offer to serve as a mentor to whoever takes over. I also talk about the importance of director training. And so whether that's Toastmasters is actually great at that, you know, with providing formalized training to anyone who does take on a director's role on the executive of their club or by serving the district or whatever. They have formalized training, and that's great. But you'd be surprised at how many nonprofit and volunteer organizations don't have any formal training for their directors. So that's a really important thing that I talk about as well.
Okay, you mentioned a lot of things there, Dorian. Let's start at, I guess, chapter 3 in your book, where you talk about Robert's Rules of Order. Is it, I've heard about these before, and I've been a Toastmaster for a while, so I've been experiencing many meetings which consisted of these rules of order. But as just a regular Toastmaster, somebody who occasionally is up on my board, if you want to say, of the Toastmasters Club, is this something really worth learning and getting into? How many other clubs outside of Toastmasters use these rules of order?
Almost all the clubs that I've been associated with. I've been on small boards, like right now I'm on the board of my recreational club in my community. We use Robert's Rules of Order. When I was on some national boards, like for the Professional Writers Association of Canada or Access Copyright, we use Robert's Rules of Orders. I've pretty much used it in every organization I've belonged to, unions, whatever. Everybody goes by those rules. It's almost universal in North America. I think in other parts of the world, it may be somewhat different, but in North America, you can count on Robert's Rules of Order being the status quo, the way to do things.
Doreen, in many Toastmasters clubs that I've been involved with, there does not seem to be a clear understanding of how to employ Robert's Rules of Order. And I'm guilty of that myself. What suggestions do you have for clubs to really get on the same page and know that they're following the rules consistently? I'm thinking maybe like assigning a parliamentarian for your club or something like that. Would you suggest that would be helpful?
Yes, I think that most clubs do have someone in their club that is quite versed in Robert's Rules of Order. So it's certainly great to have that resource. In Manitoba here, we actually have a parliamentarian's club, and they do visits to anybody that invites them. So that's another great exercise. Like in our club, we've invited the parliamentarians to come and make a presentation to our club, and they do some role playing where, you know, they actually act out difficult situations so that people can see how Robert's Rules of Order helps get you over the hump. And that's really, really helpful. There's also a book out that's the newly abridged condensed form of Robert's Rules of Order, which is based on the original that was published by Mr. Roberts himself. And that is very helpful to have as a guide, and I'd certainly recommend that all Toastmasters get a copy of it and read it and then use those skills at their meetings.
All right, let's move to Chapter 7 in your book. Chapter 7 helps you determine if your own goals are compatible with those of the organization. Can you kind of explain how this would work when you're thinking about taking a position in your Toastmasters club?
Well, I think that, you know, you've got to really think about the fact that Toastmasters is an international organization. And so the clubs and the people who serve the clubs have to realize that they have to operate within a certain protocol. And I've been in clubs where I've seen people leading those clubs and they're not adhering at all to what's going on at the international level. They're not really following the protocol. And I found that to be rather uncomfortable for myself because I was trained as a young Toastmaster to follow the rules and to operate within that context so that when you go to another club or you go to a conference or a convention that you kind of know how to expect things are going to progress. So I think that that's one thing that people have to realize is when they do offer to serve their club, that there are certain rules and regulations and protocol that they should follow and that they shouldn't just go off on a tangent trying to run their club the way they think it should be run. There's definitely protocol that they must follow. And that's why in the book I suggest, you know, leaving your hat at the door and your ego at the door. Like when you go to serve, whether it's Toastmasters or any nonprofit organization, you are to follow the motivation that the club has been going under, their vision statement, whatever, not create new things from scratch and forget about what's been done before. You know, you take the knowledge that's put into place and you build on it. So I think, you know, following protocol is really important in any role you serve.
Okay.
Doreen, something I've found in my experience volunteering is that it always seems shortly after I volunteer, I find myself in a position of needing to recruit new volunteers into the organization. And a phenomenon that seems to be pretty common is potential volunteers or people who move into volunteer roles having this impression that, well, this is just a volunteer job, so I don't really need to give it the same focus that I need to give a professional role.
It's not a real job.
Exactly, yeah. What advice do you have for helping organizations instill a sense of ownership and mission in those who volunteer?
Well, that's precisely why I wrote this book and why I entitled it Before You Say Yes, because I think that that's the stage at which people really need to become educated about their roles. Before they agree to take on the role, they need to find out what time commitment is involved, what duties are they agreeing to take on, what responsibilities will they have, what kind of training will they get. They need to ask those questions before they take on the role so that if they're doing a job and then, as you mentioned, they need to recruit others, then they have the full information that they can pass on to others. You know, if you take on a role under duress, you know, where you're forced into it and you just say, oh, okay, I'll do it, and you don't know all the facts ahead of time, that's where you'll run into trouble because it's really important to find out how much time is involved. How many meetings are involved? Will the meetings be face-to-face or will they be using technology like we're using today with Skype? I think that's really important because some organizations are very flexible and considerate of the individual's personal obligations. Others are much more rigid and they just basically say, hey, if you're taking on this role, you better be there and you better, you know, do your job, but they don't give you much support.
Let's talk about the idea of virtual meetings for a moment. I know in Toastmasters clubs, many of the club members that I speak with as an officer of the club, when I try to bring them in, recruit them to take over my position once I'm out of the officer role, one of their main concerns is the idea that they just don't have time. They don't have time for all the officer meetings that there's going to be. And I stress that a lot of times the meetings that we have are virtual or certainly can be virtual. Mm-hmm. What are the pros and cons of actually having a virtual meeting versus a face-to-face meeting in the terms of a Toastmasters officers meeting?
I actually cover that in the book. I have a chapter about that because I think that, you know, sometimes human interaction is compromised with the use of virtual meetings because sometimes being in the room with someone and watching their body language and looking, being able to look into their eyes and really getting a sense of where they're coming from helps you gain a greater understanding of their opinions, their priorities, whatever. Sometimes when we use virtual meetings, we lose that. Sometimes we don't, because I think if you begin the process by having in-person meetings where you already know that person and you know how to interpret their voice and their body language, and you can augment that by use of technology for subsequent meetings, then I think that technology is a wonderful thing. But I personally don't see it ever replacing face-to-face meetings. I think it's just a tool that can help facilitate meetings where people can't always make it. I know myself, I live in a rural area here in Manitoba. an hour out of Winnipeg, and some of the meetings that I was scheduled to attend last winter, we had, I guess it was 2 winters ago, we had a rather difficult winter here, and so I just participated in the meetings via Skype, so it was great, because everybody knows me, they know my opinion on things, and so it wasn't like I was dealing, or they were dealing with an unknown entity, they already knew me, so by participating via Skype, that worked just fine. Like I say, I don't see it ever replacing face-to-face contact, but it's an excellent tool and should be used when possible. You know, if you have, say, for instance, you have a Toastmasters club and you have a member that does live a couple hours away and they can't make all the meetings, that won't prevent them from serving on the executive if they're asked to do so, as long as they can attend the occasional meeting in person and then they can participate in executive meetings via Skype or some other form of technology. I think it would work.
All right. During a few moments ago, you talked about the importance of volunteers coming into their roles with their eyes wide open, really understanding what's going to be expected of them. And you also mentioned that often people are sort of nudged into a volunteer position, an officer position. It strikes me that if it can be difficult enough to get people to volunteer, even when you say, look, you know, even if you just do this minimum amount of stuff, you know, you'll be helping the club. But when you really put it out on the line, doesn't that make it even more of a challenge to get people to step up? I mean, Beau mentioned the time being a concern a lot of people have, but just looking at all the responsibilities as an officer you're expected to fulfill could certainly, I think, put people off from accepting the role.
Not if they're approaching it in an adult, intelligent fashion. I think that if you take on any responsibility, whether it's a marriage or a job or a volunteer commitment, you want to go in with your eyes open and with all the information you can so that you know that what you're getting into and you know what your responsibilities are and you know whether or not you can meet those responsibilities.
So how do we as leaders, though, present that opportunity to potential officers in a compelling way so that they will see it and say, yes, I want to serve?
Well, I think by setting a good example. I think that if the leaders that are in place now, say, for instance, in a Toastmasters club, fill those roles with enthusiasm and they fill them competently and they engage encouragement from the rest of the club, then it actually becomes contagious and people want to participate because they see that they can have fun doing it, that they can learn things by doing it, and that they can actually better themselves. I've learned tremendous skills from my volunteer activities. I've learned how to be more confident, more capable, just from the different volunteer activities I've taken on over the years because they've taught me new skills. So I think that that's a way that we can sell volunteerism to our fellow members is by saying, you know, you'll actually be a better, stronger person by taking on this role because you'll learn these leadership skills. You'll learn how to gain consensus, you know, how to be a team player, how to mentor people. You know, those kinds of activities are fun and engaging.
Do you know, one of the things I was thinking about when you were asking your question before, Ryan, is sometimes we tend to undersell the positions. And I know I'm guilty of this as well sometimes, because if people aren't very excited to jump up and take a position, a volunteer position, you tend to say, well, you know what, you really don't have to spend that much time doing it. You kind of sell them the very
minimum. Just go to officer training.
Just go to the training and they'll tell you what to do. No, you tend to sell the very minimum, and that kind of sets them up for, I guess, the wrong expectations.
Mm. Okay, yeah, like, I think that if we don't give our fellow members or the potential recruits that we're trying to get involved in the activities, if we don't give them accurate information by which to base their decision whether or not to take on the role, we're actually, you know, setting them up for failure versus setting them up for success. The more information you have before you take on a role, the better job you'll do at that role.
Gotcha. So I think the solution is not really to undersell the duties and the responsibilities, but just really sell the positive aspects of taking on the duties and the responsibilities. Okay, well, this has been fantastic. Can you just quickly plug your book? Tell us a little bit more about your book and where to get it.
Sure. Here it is. It's called Before You Say Yes, And it's available online, on Amazon, whatever. You can get it. And it's a guide that will help you do any volunteer role better. And I do wrap up in chapter 12 with 20 tips that'll help you be the most effective director you can be, or the most effective volunteer you can be. So I think for $20, it's a good deal. And I've had a lot of input from Toastmasters on it, and they've been very supportive of the book. So I think I've hit the nail on the head, and I hope that people will find it useful.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being with us. We really appreciate it. Best of success with your book, and we hope to see you at one of the upcoming Toastmasters conferences.
Thank you. And if people want to get in touch with me, they can do so via my website. It's wizardofwords.net.
Perfect. All right, Doreen, thank you very much for being
with
us.
Thank you, Doreen.
You take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, everybody. That was Doreen, and how did you say you pronounce your last name?
Pengrass.
Pengrass, okay.
Pengrass.
With a lot of extra letters in there, it doesn't matter. this is kind of ironic timing with this interview, just because, as you know, Ryan, I was elected president of our Toastmasters Club.
Yes, you were, Bill.
Good for me.
You still feeling good about that after this interview?
Yes, I'm feeling more confident now, and
All right. And
I know how to. Well, fortunately, I didn't have to go out and recruit for our board.
You will next year.
I will next year, exactly. And now I know how.
Yeah, that's right.
Now I know not to undersell, but to just get right in there, sell the benefits.
Yep.
And I think this is wonderful information.
Definitely.
For all Toastmasters.
Definitely.
All right. Any listener feedback for this week? I don't believe we have any.
No, we don't. For any listeners that do want to contribute feedback, please feel free to call our listener feedback voicemail line at 1-888-451-8862. You can send us an email, podcast@toastmasters.org. You can post on our blogs at toastmasterspodcast.com, or find us on Twitter, twitter.com/theTMpodcast.
Great. Thank you very much, everybody, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Isn't it about time you published that book you've been thinking about? We can help with that. At ebookit.com, we've been providing authors and small presses with ebook publishing services since 2010. Visit us today at ebookit.com and let us know how we can help you.